Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello, folks. Women's semi-finals day today at the US Open, and, well, it's been a day like no other, really, for us, because, as you'll know by now, Her Majesty the Queen passed away today, which meant wall-to-wall news coverage in the UK. I wasn't required for commentary on BBC Radio on the tennis today. It may be affected tomorrow as well, maybe even over the weekend. We're still waiting for confirmation about all of that. The Prime Video coverage as well, that was reduced a little in the UK. The matches have been played and screened, though, but it has meant no studio work for Catherine today. All of that, very much understandable. It's what we would have expected in the UK. But for the podcast with our global audience, well, we're going to proceed as normal. Daily podcasts. We know that some of our listeners may not want to listen to it today and maybe over the next few days as well. And we very much understand that. We respect that. But at the same time, the US Open here has continued. We're the Tennis Podcast. We're here to cover it. So we're going to do that. And do that for those of you that are listening right now and anybody else who wants to over the next few days. Has been a strange old day, though, hasn't it, Catherine?
Yeah, a day that we'll never forget, I don't think. One of those sort of, you'll remember where you were. And look, people will feel a broad range of emotions about this, a broad sort of volume of emotions about this. Some will feel none at all and say, oh, a woman that I don't know has died. But I just think it's just unsettling. My 97-year-old grandpa passed away while I was at the Australian Open this year, and what my brother said to me when I spoke to him and sort of was confused about how upset I was about it, because he was very elderly and very much ready to go, if his comments were to be believed. And my brother said, it's the disappearance of something that felt strangely permanent. And I think that sums up feelings today. I think it's just very unsettling. And for that reason, some people may not want to listen to a tennis podcast, but it might make some people more want to listen to a tennis podcast. So hopefully the fact that you're here means that you want to be listening to this. So we're going to talk about tennis.
We are, because we've just been watching the first of the women's semi-finals between Caroline Garcia and Ons Jabeur. And Matt, I was out getting a bit of food for the first few games, and I was very much expecting, when I came back up with it, to be on serve, to be at 2-1. I thought it'd be all very close. And I walked in and you said, Garcia's having a shocker. And Jabeur is clearly on it. What was going on?
Garcia was having a shocker.
Oh, dear. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the player we've seen over the last 2 to 3 months, and in particular at this tournament, in particular the other night against Coco Gauff, was not there today. and I don't know whether it was the old Caroline Garcia, maybe it was, but whatever it was, it wasn't the new version that we've come to expect. And she was making an awful lot of errors in those first few games. And honestly, it kind of felt done very early on. I didn't have any confidence that Garcia was going to get it back. It just had a an awkward feeling to it. You know, the sort of match we've seen before where a player starts badly. They've only got 2 out of 3 sets to try and get it together. And she didn't. She never came that close, really. Jabeur obviously played very, very well and had led the head-to-head, and that was maybe a factor as well. But I expected a lot more from Garcia tonight.
It was a perfect match example for me, evidence of why women need to be playing best of five, particularly in these big matches, because you felt the sense of panic in Garcia. It's not happening. I'm tight and I need to get it together quickly or this match is going to be over.
Yeah, she looked over to her box after 2 or 3 games with an extremely worried expression. Mm,
that feeling of I can't afford to take time to settle here. And obviously her feeling that exacerbated the problem and the match was over extremely quickly. But there was a real panic. And yeah, she didn't deal with the panic well at all. She, easy for me to say from here, but she should have been reining the margins in. But she was going for the lines and hitting particularly sort of middle stages of that opening set some really rash, sort of dumb-looking shots that just smacked of rabbit in the headlights.
And they were trying to get her to, when she went over to the corner, to even move in further, to go for it more. It seemed to me.
And look, I'm a big fan of that return position, and it's obviously been hugely effective for her for weeks now. And I can understand feeling like it's that old balance that we often talk about between champions adjust, but also back your game, believe in it.
It's tough, isn't it?
It's, you don't want to be Gael Monfils playing Novak Djokovic in the US Open semi-final, just coming out there clearly not believing in your game from the word go. Very, very tough balance. So she tried to back herself and just keep doing the things that had been working like a dream up until today. But maybe it was a problem for her tonight that she'd been winning so easily up until this point throughout this streak. I think the most games she had lost in a set before tonight was 4. She hadn't been in a battle. She hadn't been forced to find a plan B for a very long time.
She'd only lost back-to-back games once in the whole tournament, was a stat that they said on ESPN.
Wow.
And suddenly she finds herself losing the first 2 games of the semi-final. It was unknown territory for her, and she'd only lost her serve 3 times in the whole tournament. I think she lost it 4 times tonight. Yeah.
What is it that Jabeur is doing, though, do you think? Because, I mean, I think it's very easy to look at that match and say Garcia didn't turn up. And I think parts of it, that's correct, certainly in the early part of the match. I watched all of the second set, quite a lot of the end of the first set, but I thought towards the end, mid parts of the second set, Garcia was starting to do some of the things that have made her so dangerous in the last few months. But they just didn't have any effect on Jabeur. She has that ability to serve in a way that handcuffs the player standing in and trying to take the time away. And then her hands are such that she can handle the firepower.
Yeah, those were the two, I think. The serve, she picked her spots really well and hit quite a lot of aces for Jabeur today and kind of exposed that return position, I suppose. And then the hands, like, she can deal with power coming at her and deflect and redirect and put the ball in a few awkward spaces, I think. I don't think Jabeur feels as rushed as some players do when they face Garcia. And also, I think Jabeur, you know, she hasn't got a lot more experience than Garcia in these situations, but she's got very recent more experience. And I think she probably did take something from having been in a Grand Slam semi-final before. And she was determined not to let that become a match, not to have one of her lapses. You know, she was looking over at her box and pointing very determinedly at the court, like, okay, this is the one, I'm not letting this up. And she didn't. She played a great match.
Jabeur, Catherine, to me, is an unexpected, pleasant surprise at this tournament. You know, we talked at the outset, didn't we, how we just couldn't see, or she wasn't in anybody's conversation. She wasn't really in anybody's mix. I picked her twice to lose matches over the course of the fortnight, and it's because of the lack of form added to the lack of reputation, and kind of evidence of her credibility at these type of tournaments on a regular basis. And yet, she's just shut that down at every stage.
Yeah, look, as you know, I'm a total Jabeur believer, and I have been since spring of this year, I think. I really do believe that she'll get there. I do believe she'll win a Grand Slam title, and I believed this before this tournament. But she wasn't in my quarterfinal lineup, and I can't remember what her early round sort of projected matchups are, but I don't think I even hovered over her. I don't think she was someone that I deliberated over.
So many other players were playing well as
well,
weren't
absolutely.
They?
And there'd been a little injury question mark. I think she didn't she retire from a match early on in the hard court summer, or certainly was struggling with injury in one, and wasn't a factor in Toronto or Cincinnati. And I'd you know, the Wimbledon run came off the back of form. She won a tournament leading in. The Wimbledon quarterfinal the previous year, she'd won a tournament leading in. The French Open, when she really should have had a great run. I know she lost first round, but was off the back of tremendous success in the build-up. I do think she's do things by the playbook kind of player, tick off the milestones, do the right preparation, be in the right mindset, quite a deliberate player, if you like, which is in opposition to her game style, which is so free-spirited. But yeah, I didn't have it anywhere near my specific US Open mix.
Same. And I think a lot of it for me was hardcore. Like, I know that sounds weird, because most players are fine on hard court, and then it's either clay or grass that maybe is their speciality, or the ones they really have to work at. And I know she's done well at the Australian Open before, Jabeur, but I just felt like clay and grass are where she separates herself from a lot of players. And she says herself she has to adapt to hard court. And I just didn't think that she would be likely to have a really deep run at this hard court major, where there's so many more players comfortable on the surface, and where her game maybe you wouldn't think would quite, you know, suit it so much in terms of the variety she's able to bring. That those things really help her on clay and grass, and yet, well, she's just shown me to be an idiot because her game's working well, and she does seem to have a real comfort level.
There was a moment of debate in the ESPN commentary team tonight, wasn't there, when Jabeur hit a drop shot return, which became a trademark over the summer, and we bloomin' love the drop shot return, don't we? We all collectively love it, and it didn't win her the point, did it? I mean, it was a successful return, but just sat up a little bit and I think was hit away for a winner from Garcia. And Pam Shriver, who's in the courtside commentary position for ESPN, said, I don't like that on a hard court. I like the shot, but not on a hard court. And Chrissy Evert chimed in, I don't mind it, which I just loved. But, you know, you wouldn't even be having that debate on a clay court, or even it was very effective at Wimbledon, wasn't it? I mean, it was one of the shots of the summer.
I think at the very least, it's a great surprise tactic. Bit like
yes, and she
serve.
Didn't do it. In fact, I think she might only have done it that one time. But that's an example of how, you know, she's not able to just do the things that she was doing on, you know, not all of her trickery works. Not all of it is as transferable. So it's, yeah, it's exactly as you said, David. It's a lovely surprise.
Do you know, I think back 6 months. It's about 6 months. Ash Barty's just retired. And I remember asking I don't know whether you were both on the podcast at that time or whether it was just one of you, but I remember asking, why isn't Ons Jabeur the next Ash Barty? Why isn't she when she's got this skill set? And
I think she asked herself that and she at should some
be.
Point.
She should be capable of doing more or less what Ash Barty has achieved over the last few years, given how good she is, given how she has a heavy forehand and she has a slice backhand, she has drop shots and even more variety than Ash Barty did. But she doesn't, or she didn't, have that reliable package of point-winning combinations. And I think she's developed so much more professionalism, so much more logic to her winning, and made it repeatable.
I honestly think she has asked herself that question, or maybe it's not even had to be a question. I think she's maybe before Ash Barty retired looked at her and gone, there's no reason that can't be me.
I can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something I discussed with Clang alert here, Martina Navratilova, during the Madrid coverage on Prime Video, and she definitely believed that too, that she said, how could she not have been an inspiration for a player like Ons Jabeur, especially as it took Ash Barty a bit of time to figure it out and package it, as we always say.
And neither one tall, neither one just intimidating.
Neither with a bludgeoning weapon. No. You know, Barty had a big-ish forehand, a lot of spin on it. It was a good weapon, but it wasn't just a point-ending hammer, as Matteo Berrettini would say, although he that's his trademark, isn't it? Only he has a hammer.
not in the corner, finally, didn't
No. We all have our hammers blunted once in a while, don't we?
and left it in the locker room, left it in the shed.
That's going to be used again, I like that.
on this point of it being a lovely surprise, I was speaking to Reem Abelil, who is obviously we had on the podcast over Wimbledon and has followed Ons Jabeur incredibly closely, and she was saying that she is so pleased that Jabeur is backing up Wimbledon, because she did quite a lot of news reports and bulletins around the time of just after the Wimbledon final, and a lot of it was like, oh, well, why didn't she win the Wimbledon final? You know, those sort of lazy sports takes from people who don't follow tennis closely. And they were asking questions like, does she need a new coach? All that sort of thing, just off the back of one Wimbledon final loss. And
extraordinary, isn't it?
And Reem was like, obviously Jabeur doesn't need to prove herself to those people, but backing it up and doing it at the US Open will do that. So I'm sort of pleased for that reason as well, I think.
Yeah, me too. The other thing I'm happy about is that another country, another city discovers Ons Jabeur on a big scale. She's suddenly in front of the national TV audience here. She's in front of 23,000 people on the Arthur Ashe Stadium court, and she wins them over, a bit like last night Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner won people over, and Francis Tiafoe over the last few days. This is a great opportunity for players to come out of the shadows of Serena Williams and all the big three, and you know, all the big names that we've had over these many years. And Juan Martin Del Potro was in the house last night. And, you know, great to see him, great to see Andy Roddick. But this is these players' time now. And Jabeur is the sort of player, and I kind of feel similarly about Świątek. You want them to show everybody what they've got, because they've got a lot. I think it's really, really great news.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or on your smart TV in HD.
Sounds great. There's genuinely nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere.
And can I just sit and watch court Susan Longlin all day?
You sure can, David. Wherever the stories are, the rivalries emerge and the generations clash, you can watch it all with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Be there when it happens by subscribing to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription.
So Ons Jabeur is going to face Iga Świątek in the final after what ended up being a really good match. Certainly the third set, it was sort of two players playing well separately for the first two sets, with Iga Świątek and Arina Sabalenka. But final set, Matt, that felt more like the Iga Świątek from the first part of the year.
She was brilliant. She was really good. She was twice a break down in it. 2-love down, 4-2 down, but cut out the errors, locked her game down, but was still going for her shots. I thought that was the best tennis I've seen Świątek play all tournament in the second set and third set tonight. And as you said, second set there wasn't that much resistance from Sabalenka, but the third set there really was. And yeah, I feel like Świątek really played well tonight and has set herself up well for the final. I've thought all along this tournament that Iga Świątek's not going to win it. Someone's going to beat her because she's vulnerable and not playing that well. But she's fought through matches, tough moments, and she finds herself in the final. It's the mark of a number one, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
The writing was on the wall for Sabalenka when she went and won that first set.
What was she doing? Yeah, so just to, you know, sum up Arina Sabalenka's Grand Slam year, 6-0 when she lost the first set, all three of her defeats when she won the first set. What a confusing tennis player.
She's bonkers, isn't she?
It's extraordinary. And, I mean, she definitely took it to Świątek, and I felt she had it ripped away from her tonight. I didn't feel she did a lot wrong. And I think it's a measure of just how good the world number one is when she hits a stride. I mean, the movement that she's got, you know, we talked a lot about movement last night following the Alcaraz-Sinner match. But, I mean, that movement, Catherine, that it's like that wins her matches sometimes.
Yeah, the backhand from the splits position on the run is becoming an iconic Iga Świątek move, isn't it? It's like a combination. It's like a Kim Clijsters Novak Djokovic hybrid type thing, and it's quite a sight to behold. Yeah, she's incredible. I still think there's a little bit of vulnerability there. That forehand is attackable. You can break it down. But she brings it back, you know, as you said, Matt. This is the real mark of a world number one, or a world number one that's here to stay, certainly. And sorry to be always mentioning Ash Barty, but, you know, we're really digging deep with Iga Świątek as world number one and learning about her in that position. And I feel like I've almost learned more about her this tournament, watching this run, than I did the French Open, watching her pile up the mostly very one-sided wins. Yeah, she's becoming more and more compelling. And, I don't know, I'll almost always rather see a three-set win than a straight sets. You know, I love the concept of Iga's Bakery, but I love competition in a tennis match, and I love seeing her compete and dig.
Yeah, yeah. That's
what's compelling.
It is very magnetic to watch somebody just grit the teeth the way she does. She's such a competitor, actually. She's so up for it. I have a lot of time for watching her just generally, and I worry for her at times because she seems so on the brink of kind of really struggling to handle it all, and yet she is handling it all. It's and that I think makes her play at her very best, is when it's that combination of intensity but not combusting on the spot sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it would be a very different win, wouldn't it, to her last two Grand Slam victories, because as you said, those came when she was playing brilliant tennis throughout the whole 2 weeks, you know. Here she's really had to battle for it, and yet there have been these tremendous peaks of tennis as well, like we saw in the latter stages tonight. She is a compelling watch, and it feels like a very fitting final, actually.
Did Sabalenka blow it at all? I mean, you know, she's had this a lot now. She's, being in position to reach a Grand Slam final and not doing it.
Yeah, because she's played three setters in her semi-finals, hasn't she? She has come close.
I mean, I am going to defer to those in the room that were awake throughout the third set.
it got late.
I think this might be on you, Matt.
Well, Świątek won 16 of the last 20 points.
Wow.
And that was from a breakdown. You know, Sabalenka did have it. But, look, I don't think she was absolutely peaking in those final games, Sabalenka, because otherwise she probably would have won them. Her level did dip, but Świątek really knuckled down. And as you said, the movement, she gets behind the ball. It's hard to hit it past her. She was sprinting everything down, coming up with winners of her own. I think Sabalenka will feel like she could have won that match, yes, but it's Iga Świątek, the world number one, and she lost 6-4 in the third. It wasn't a disaster from Sabalenka. It was much better performance than her US Open semi-final last year, where I really think she did let that one go with just a whirlwind of unforced errors. This wasn't like that.
Mm. Well, we've got sort of 24 hours to really have a proper think about this final and preview it in tomorrow's show. But I mean, it is a sort of kind of immediate thought, her against Jabeur.
Well, I know I'm a broken record, but I'm becoming obsessed with rivalries. Stop trying to make rivalries happen, Catherine. Well, I am. I'm trying to make rivalries happen. Make no apology for it. The sport's built on rivalries, and I think this could be one. You know, contrast of styles. Sabalenka Barty was building into a rivalry, wasn't it, before Ash Barty retired. I feel like, you know, this could be the next incarnation of that, if you
and
like.
It works on every surface, really, doesn't
yeah,
it? Because they can both play on them all.
Exactly, and the head-to-head is interesting. They're currently at two wins apiece. Świątek won their last meeting in Rome of this year, but that was when Jabeur was really running on fumes at that stage. She had won Madrid and somehow made it through to that Rome final, despite being sort of completely down and out against Maria Sakkari, I think, in the quarters or semi-finals. Ons Jabeur won their meeting before that in Cincinnati last year, so that's on a hard court. That was quite one-sided in Jabeur's favour. She won at Wimbledon the previous year, en route to that breakthrough run for her to the quarterfinals of a slam for the first time. And then Świątek won in Washington back in 2019. But if you'll recall, when asked about Jessica Pegula beating her in Washington 2019, she does not count Washington 2019 in any head-to-head.
You can't have it both ways, Iga.
You can't have it both ways, Iga. So by your own logic, you're down in the head-to-head to Ons Jabeur. Which I find very interesting. And, you know, with Jabeur's head-to-heads, maybe that was a factor today against Caroline Garcia. I think there was a lot going on against Caroline Garcia, but of course, very one-sided head-to-head in Jabeur's favour. So, It's interesting. It's really got all the ingredients for a lovely, delicious rivalry, and I'm going to be trying to make it happen unapologetically.
And it's just fitting. They've been the best two players of the season, really. I mean, I know Garcia's had this run in the last couple of months, but Jabeur and Świątek are one and two, and it feels like a really good way to wrap up the Grand Slam season, I think.
Yeah, it does. So that's a match to savour on Saturday. I think they play the final at 4 p.m. local time, don't they?
Yes.
So that's a good time for a number of time zones. I'm sure there'll be those of you out there that it isn't good for, that it's not never going to be a time that works for everybody, but certainly will be one that works in the UK and also in Europe. It's, what, 10 o'clock at night, isn't it? So we shall see, and we'll have another 24 hours to think about who we reckon is going to win it. What else? We've got a couple of double semi-finals to tell you about on the men's side, with British players involved. Joe Salisbury and Rajiv Ram, experienced pairing now, won through today against Cabal and Farah, 10-6 in the third set tiebreak. And they'll now face Wesley Kuhlhoff and Neil Skupski, who were 6-4, 7-5 winners over Roger and Arevalo. So Salisbury-Ram against Kuhlhoff-Skupski, that's now going to be tomorrow, the final, at 12 o'clock local time. On paper, that is a tantalising final, isn't it? And it's got a lot of meaning for these teams. I mean, I interviewed Kuhlhoff and Skupski a couple of days ago, actually, for the BBC, and I was really struck by the way Neil Skupski, I asked him about the potential of becoming world number one in doubles, and he said, look, I'm really not interested in individual world number one. I want us to be a world number one team. And he was very motivated on that score. But, you know, that both teams have got that sort of dangling there.
Yeah, look, I think Neil Skupski and Wesley Kuhlhoff have been the best team of this year. They are on track to become the world number one team. On form, they are the world number one pairing. 6 tour titles as a scratch pairing. Started playing together at the start of the year. But the Grand Slam success had been what was missing. This was their first semi-final together, and now it'll be their first final together. Both of them have had success with other partners, particularly Wesley Kuhlhoff, who won the ATP Finals, didn't he, with Nikola Mektic at the end of the season, a couple of seasons ago, before Mektic then teamed up with Pavic ahead of the Olympic year and went on to win Olympic gold together. But yeah, it's tantalising. Defending champions, the really established pairing of Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury against the pairing of the moment, Wesley Kuhlhoff and Neil Skupski, but that haven't done it at this top level. It's tasty.
Yeah, I suspect there's going to be some seriously dynamic rallies in that final, and I'm going to go and watch that one for sure. We've also had one of the mixed doubles pairings reaching the final, with Storm Sanders and John Peers getting through today, and Sanders will also join up with Caroline Dollahide in the doubles to take on Katie McNally and Taylor Townsend in the semi-finals of the women's doubles. So lots and lots of things to be decided over the next couple of days. We'll bring you further updates to cover all the doubles and the wheelchair tournaments and the junior events as well over the weekend, which are also going to feature the singles finals over the weekend too. But the men's semi-finals are going to be played, first of all, tomorrow. So after that men's doubles final at 12, we've got Casper Ruud against Karen Khachanov at 3 o'clock, followed by 7 o'clock, Francis Tiafo against Carlos Alcaraz. And this potential to have the world number one decided as well in the final, if Ruud and Alcaraz get to the final. What are we thinking? You don't have to give away everything you've got in your newsletter predictions, because we've actually named set scores in there, haven't we? But, I mean, what's your feeling generally, Catherine, about these two matches?
I think big forehands.
Yes, I think that's fair.
I think Casper Ruud for the first one. So I've been really impressed by him, particularly the last couple of rounds. There's a steal there that I perhaps haven't given him credit enough for before. And Khachanov clearly has game, but I just have a confidence in Casper Ruud. And I think he's really motivated by that number one thing. I really do. Whatever we all might think of it, it's helping him. And I do think Alcaraz is going to come through the second one.
Be interesting to see whether he's... Is he going to flag at all physically? Yeah, two successive five setters?
Is he going to feel it, you know, with the crowd against him? We all remember Hugo Gaston and Paris indoors last year when he left the court, I think, in tears. Certainly very traumatised and upset by how partisan they were. I mean, that is a Parisian crowd, which obviously is partisan in a different way to any other crowd in the world, even a New York crowd. But there are question marks there, and there is a part of me that just says Tiafoe's the momentum guy somehow this year. Tiafoe's this year's Raducanu. But I'm going to go with Alcaraz, because I just think he's so darn good at tennis.
Yeah, he's pretty good at tennis. What do you think, Matt? Where are you falling on these two matches?
No notes, really. That was comprehensive analysis. There's a sort of starter main course feel about them. You know, like Ruud Khachanov, respect the hell out of those two players. Think it will be a competitive, tight match. I also back Ruud. But the one I'm very excited for is Tiafoe Alcaraz. I think that could be electric. It should be. If they both play well, it will be. I mean, the way they move, the way they hit the ball.
That if they play well, both of them... I mean, imagine how into it the crowd will be, the way they engage.
Yeah.
Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah. Friday Night Lights.
I watched that show.
So did I.
Learned everything that I know about American football from that show. Which you'd think would be more, but anyway.
I'm going to say.
Oh, well.
I'm on a journey.
You are. We're all on journeys, aren't we? Moving on. So... As a final word, just to say our US Open mascot is Phoebe. We have our own mascots. Mine is Darwin. Catherine's is Carter. Matt's is the dearly departed Gerald. Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss sponsor Billie Jean the dog. Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner are our executive producers and top blokes. We will be back again tomorrow for another edition of the show after both the men's semi-finals. We'll be here with you over the weekend as well. It's been a very strange day, as we said at the start of the show, and we're just looking forward to watching the tennis just at the moment, really, because that's something that keeps on going, and that's what we're here for. We hope you continue to enjoy the shows. The newsletter will be continuing as well the next few days. And yeah, the competition remains open for AO Travel. If you want to have a look in our show notes, all the links for all this stuff is there. And you can enter, you can become a friend, etc., etc. Anyway, good night for now from all of us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.